Yeah, I'm gonna start off doing a little bit of a news thing. I'm gonna try and make it a little bit funny, but you know, I'm not actually that funny, so we'll see how
Okay,
that
good
goes.
luck. I'm gonna make deliberate stunned silence at your jokes just to
Fuck
make
you,
it. Yeah, you
fuck
shouldn't have told me, man. Now I'm just gonna.
you. Fuck you.
From Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. It's surely Liverpool's day now.
Barnes. Oh, that's spectacular!
Eriksen tries again. Oh, that's phenomenal! Absolutely phenomenal!
Manchester City champions, and it's been decided in their favour.
Hello, and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I am your host this week, Shane Lees, and joining me, I've got Harry Philby.
Hello.
And Andrew Clark. How are you doing?
Evening. How are you doing yourself?
Yeah, good. I have got some news for you guys.
Ooh,
some football news. It has actually turned out that Luke Shaw is only the second stupidest left back to ever play for Man U. His number one is now Patrice Evra. He has put out a video on Instagram. That's right, we're down with the kids now on this podcast. We know what Instagram is, even if I don't have an account.
I don't have an account either, so I'll join you in that one.
Well, Patrice Evra has posted a video on his Instagram of him. What I can only describe as nibbling on raw chicken. He's like, he's sort of spanking it, massaging it, and then he sort of sucks on it / nibbles it a little bit.
I've just found the video.
Yeah,
that's why I don't want Instagram.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, but he has actually made Luke Shaw look like a smart left back for Man United, and this is the player who was famed for being a moron at Southampton. So this is levels, Luke.
I was going to say, it's not exactly news that Patrice Evra's an idiot. That's been fairly well known for a while.
You would kind of expect that a professional footballer who's had like nutritionists and dietitians going at him for his entire career would think not to lick and eat raw chicken.
Yeah.
In fact, I can trust most children not to do that.
I'm watching the video now, and it's just got some really weird pop song in the back. Oh my god. Oh, I'm turning out.
You are
oh
now
my god.
Welcome to the live reaction.
Yeah. Oh my god. That's like
right.
God. Yeah, don't watch that. Bad
yeah, even Lewis Hamilton has said, not gonna lie, this is weird. So
yeah, that's really
there
we go. I'll just take your words for it. I'm like
it's the kind of thing I'd expect of like performance art. Like or something weird. It's really weird, man. Don't watch it.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be watching that video in a dark room all by myself. Let's put it.
I'll just
way.
Write that down. Give us 2 seconds. Don't watch Patrice Evra video.
Yeah, don't watch him caressing a chicken.
In other news,
yeah,
Daniel Sturridge has had to ask for more time to respond to his FA betting charge. Daniel Sturridge has been accused of doing bad things, giving inside information to a friend for when he moved to West Brom, and that friend then placed a bet on him moving to West Brom. I think he's learned his lesson, you'd have to say, because he's put on Twitter that his odds of him doing it in time are at 2-1.
Okay, that one actually was funny.
Thank you. I said I was going to do funny things before the show started. I actually got a laugh there. Right, yeah, no, he's not actually put on Twitter, but he's had to ask for more time to respond to a misconduct charge. I've got to wonder, it doesn't really look good when it says, yeah, I need more time to figure out what I'm going to say, because that just kind of goes, can't say the truth. That's not going to help me, is it? So I've got to think of something a bit better.
I think he should just retire and go into comedy by the sound of that.
In other betting news, gambling companies are going to be doing a review on the amount of betting adverts that they're putting on the television. And because it is the companies themselves doing a review, my bet would be that they say it's all fine.
Wait, they're doing it themselves.
Yeah, I mean,
what's the point? They're going to be like, oh, do you know what? We need a little bit more, just a tiny bit more adverts. That's ridiculous. Surely it's got to be some independent organization, like some advertising company that looks at it and sees if it's a bad thing. I don't necessarily mind it personally, but I
imagine eventually some other external factors will come into play. Some external people will start saying things. I mean, the government's been trying to get involved in this for quite a while now. I mean, if they're doing a review, all they're going to turn around and say, no, it's fine, bet now. That's all they'll go with this. I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, nothing's going to change if they're doing it. That's bizarre.
Reading something earlier about the woman who founded Bet365, getting £265 million a year in salary.
I mean, that is more than £20.
That's quite a large salary. That's
crazy.
Joe, that is at least two times my salary.
I mean, imagine if she put it all on Leicester to win the league. That would have been an insider tip.
Would that have been insider information?
She'd win money and bankrupt the company at the same time.
Yeah, should have bankrupted a country.
All right, in the last piece of news, the Premier League has turned around and said that there is no evidence that putting further restrictions on foreign players playing in the Premier League would improve the national team. This is despite overwhelming evidence that the increased amount of foreign players has detrimented the England national team. But there's no evidence that it would help either, apparently. I've got to say, this is a little bit like betting companies investigating themselves. Of course they're going to turn and go, nah, this is fine, just keep buying Sky packages. Why do they get to say this themselves?
Yeah, it's a bit of nonsense that they get to say it themselves, but I'm just going to say it instead that I actually agree. I don't think it's a good thing. I don't even like the England quota requirement for players and clubs. I think it's been worse for players than a lot of the other times. I don't like any of it, full stop. I think you just have to let the players decide for themselves.
Like, yeah, we've had that discussion on in the past. Please go and look through some of our previous debates we've had. That was quite a good one. But Harry, I'm afraid to say you are wrong. Out me now. We voted for this. Very soon we're going to have a governmental collapse over this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've clearly won this argument. But let's talk about other England news then. Now, this is actual news. England have qualified for the Nations League semi-finals. I don't think anyone particularly saw that coming when we got drawn in the group with Spain and Croatia.
I don't think anybody really cared.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I was a pretty big sceptic. Anyone who listens to this show knows I was a pretty big sceptic of Nations League. I wasn't against the idea. I just thought it was going to be a case of the players didn't really know what they were playing for. Fans didn't really know if they were going to, you know, celebrate any of this. Then you see Harry Kane's goal, beats Croatia. You see the fans go mental in Wembley. Maybe that's me eating my words right there. I think the Nations League is kind of proving itself a little bit.
Yeah, well, we did a podcast on this, like just when the internationals were starting, like on the first round of games. And we both said, like, it's right that they do something about the friendlies because they're just dreadful. Like they're just like boring to watch. And what seems to be interesting about it is I agree with you. I feel like it's actually caught on quite well. It's still confusing. I still don't understand. I don't even know I don't know how it works. Who are we playing in the next round? But all I care is we can go, oh, we're in a semi and all this stuff. I think it has worked surprisingly well. It's made the games interesting to watch.
Is it next year when the semi-finals happen?
I don't have a fucking clue.
So it's in Portugal or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Portugal. It's next summer when there'd be no football. Joe, I think I don't mind the idea of a Nations League, but people are saying, oh, let's prove this competition works. I think they've got quite lucky. And I'm not talking about England now. I think we've actually played quite well. And we've done well enough to put ourselves in this position. I think the Nations League concept as a whole has got quite lucky because it's all happened in quite dramatic fashion. It's a bit like the South Africa World Cup. Could have been an amazing World Cup if teams didn't play just a bunch of boring 0-0 draws. Would have been like Russia. Russia should have been an awful World Cup. The teams played amazing football. They were amazing games. So it was a great World Cup.
It was a great World
this
Cup.
Tournament should have probably, by all measures, been terrible. But there just happened to be some really, really good games.
Yeah.
And great comebacks. And I think that's got the public interested.
Yeah. And I think there was also having the first year of it be fresh off the back of a World Cup and loads of interesting stories going on in the internationals, like Germany getting knocked out of the groups, with like the Netherlands having their comeback now, Spain being pretty mediocre at the moment. Like there's just loads of like little stories popping about everywhere that actually makes it quite engaging. Whereas,
well, I think that's probably one of the big benefits of what's happened. This is what I'm talking about, getting a little bit lucky, is it hasn't just been the usual suspects going through to these finals where you'd go, okay, we're going to go and watch Germany v France in the final, and who cares? They're both qualifying anyway. You know, it's not a big deal. Switzerland, they might not qualify for the Euros. Netherlands didn't qualify for the last World Cup. Everyone got to remember that. So you've got teams in there who are going to be interesting. You've kind of ended up with sort of the four best second teams in Europe, I think, in those finals, which is the Netherlands, Switzerland, Portugal and England. They're all at a very similar level. You haven't got one, you know, outright favourites. I think if any of all of them, maybe we're the outright favourites to actually win this thing now.
We're right up there.
So I think
it's gone a little bit lucky for the Nations League. But that's exactly the kind of start we need for a competition like this. Because if it is going to take off and actually be an effective replacement for friendlies, you've got to get that enthusiasm. Someone like this gets the enthusiasm right off the bat. So good thing as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's definitely got more interesting because I think the friendlies were, as you said, just boring. And I think it does bring a bit of interest in something that you're actually playing for something. And I think it does help.
And tell you what, Wayne Rooney is probably one of the unluckiest players to play for England because he had his nice little send-off against America and was immediately overshadowed.
Yeah.
Just completely overshadowed. Again, just like when he ended his career and it's all Harry Kane and no one cares what Rooney's doing. Now all of a sudden it's Harry Kane again and we've gone through into the semi-finals of this contest. Yeah, talking about England for a little bit, one of the things I was massively impressed with was Jadon Sancho.
Yeah,
he looks
incredible. Like I still haven't
watched him play yet.
He is like when you can just see that a footballer is better than everyone else. Like it sounds like a really stupid way to look at it, but his control on the ball is so tight. The ball sticks to his feet. He looks like he still needs a bit of coaching, and you'd expect it from a 18-year-old. God, he's 18. That's disturbing. But he does look an incredible talent. I thought Ben Chilwell over the last few games has been my highlight personally because he just looks like easily our best left back now, which is insane considering that we have so many players around that sort of level.
Yeah, Chilwell, I think what he's got the benefit of is he's looking like quite a complete left back. We've got some left backs who are very good at attacking, some left backs who are very good at defending, not too many who can do actually genuinely a bit of both. Yeah. But just talking about Sancho, do you know who he reminds me of? Sterling when he plays for City. And you've got to remember as well, Sterling's 5 years older than him.
Yeah.
So that's the level he's playing at. And you can't just say, oh, he's maybe just done that in the odd game for England. He's the leading assist maker in the Bundesliga. And that's arguably the third best league in the world.
And most of that has been as a substitute.
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous. And I think the Southgate project of sort of slowly but surely driving the age down of his squad, slowly but surely getting rid of those players who it's known are a bit disturbances in the team, you could easily argue it's working now.
I was also going to bring up, you were saying the fact that Wayne Rooney got outshadowed by the Nations League performance. Really, he got outshadowed by Lewis Dunk's outstanding defensive performance for England. Really, that's what you mean.
Let's just move on.
It was good, man. It was good.
Yeah, but no, it's a good thing. As I said, I think we genuinely probably are favourites out of the teams that are left. Does anyone else agree with that?
No, I think we are. I think Portugal's still quite old.
They're sort of in the same process we were about 2 years ago.
Right.
Where they've got a lot of their older good players and they just need to start phasing.
So they've still got really 2 years to basically switch around, really haven't they? We've done. So they're still a bit behind.
I think the argument would be that Portugal have a lot more talent rather than we do. So we've got some, I think we do generally have some very special talent, but Portugal probably got, they're a bit like in the France situation where we've got two or three players who could all be coming through at the same time. We've arguably got sort of one in every position.
I will say the Netherlands look hot at the moment though. They've got so many players, and it's next summer is when it will be. Yeah, I mean, if Van Dijk's off the back of like a title win and Memphis Depay is still ripping it up in Ligue 1.
Let's not talk about a Van Dijk title win. Let's not talk about
that. Something I was thinking of with regards to Germany, do you think Joachim Löw should still be in charge? Or do you think it should be time that he's done considering early exit from the World Cup? They've lost in these groups. Does he stay until 2020?
Yeah, one more tournament. I think he'll get the Euros. I think that'll probably be it.
He's done well for them for a very long time. And we've got to remember that as much as everyone, people our age, especially people who are much older than us, remember Germany as being these titans. You got to remember what Germany were not too long ago. They were not one of the best teams in the world. They were not contenders. They were a team that were arguably in that same sort of English position where you've got some very good players, but you just cannot bring it together. Löw was the one who did that for Germany. He turned that team around. And again, it's almost a bit of an Arsene Wenger sort of situation where you go, maybe he's hung around a bit too long now. But at the same time, you've kind of got to, I think you've got to give him a bit more of a send-off for now. And I think the Germans are genuinely a little bit more sentimental than we are in this sort of regard. I don't think they're going to want to kick Löw out on the back of all of this, knowing that he's won them a world title. They'll probably want to give him a little bit more. So it could be the case that they give him some friendlies and sort of, they're good friendlies that they can win and he gets an opportunity to walk out having won a couple of games. or it could be one more tournament to try and turn it back around, maybe bring through some of the younger players, set up for the next guy coming in. I don't think they're going to be harsh enough just to sack him straight away.
Yeah, I also don't think they were that bad in the World Cup. Like, I know getting knocked out in the groups is bad, but it's not like they were ripped to shreds like Spain were that year, that the year after they won the Euros, was it, when they won?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they were rubbish, because like they just lost the games like 1-0 and what 1 or 2-0, and it was a bit edgy.
Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, exactly. Like playing their best football ever.
Yeah, basically all they lacked, if they had a goal scorer in that team, they would have made it to the semis. That was basically it. Like, Werner didn't have the best tournament. Müller wasn't really on fire. Sané wasn't there, which is still bizarre to me. But like, they weren't that bad. It's not like it wasn't like a calamity. So I think he deserves another tournament, and after the amount of success he's brought to them, I can't see anybody getting at his throat if they lose a couple of games in the Nations League. It just seems, I think he'll be fine for at least the Euros.
Yeah, I mean, we've also got France, who, World Cup winners, finished second in their group, didn't really ever look like they were doing a whole lot more than that. I've seen some people saying that maybe France was a bit of a blip winning the World Cup. I know it's very, very early to say that, and the squad depth they have is absolutely ridiculous, but at the same time, is it just a case of... I do wonder whether or not it's a case of Spain has ruined everyone for international football. Because we grew up in the era where Spain won those tournaments on the bounce. They were looking absolutely indomitable. The football they were playing was better than everyone else. So maybe we've just got so used to one team being dominant that we can't quite fathom that it's going to be a different team every single tournament. That different teams are going to be able to do it, that one team isn't going to be able to keep winning it over and over again. It's a bit like in the Premier League, Man United winning it so many years in a row. Now we're having to get used to different teams winning it every single year. No one can retain a title to save their lives. Is this just a case of international, we're having to get used to this again, that actually there's enough good teams now that they can all compete? Or have France maybe not, maybe did they flatter a little bit in the World Cup?
I don't think you're going to say one team dominate for a while, actually. I think a lot of people are going to now use the new generation coming through. Because now we're saying the older generation, you're going to say the new generation, and I think it's going to take time before you see at least one team dominate, if anyone is going to.
I mean, other teams, bigger teams that haven't done too well, Croatia, obviously in our group, World Cup final, and they were relegated to Group B now, or League B even. Is that just them maybe getting back to their level? Maybe did they just overperform in the World Cup?
No, I think that's just the... competitiveness of the group. I think like they probably are the weakest team of that group anyway, and there's a case to be made that they slightly overperformed in terms of how far they got in the World Cup, but not in terms of the teams they beat. You know, the teams they played in front of them, like, it's what we were saying the whole way, is this is the best chance we've ever got to get to a final, because we'll never play easier teams than this on the way. And we didn't even make it. Like, I don't think it says all that much about Croatia. I'd be surprised if there was any extreme reaction against it. Like, it was one of it's that nonsense thing, the thing I don't really like about small group tournaments. It's not as bad in the Champions League, but in like something like this, is where you're in a nonsense situation where a win gets you promoted and a loss gets you relegated. It's just like, I don't think that's the best format. I don't really like tournament football in general, in terms of like actually deciphering who were the best teams, because it's so small margins, but those small margins narrow themselves out over the course of a season. It's why a league is more entertaining, because it always shows who the best team was over the course of the entire year. And so for like Croatia, I don't think it says all that much. And like, really, the Nations League results don't say that much about the progress of the teams.
All right. Well, one other team I want to talk about of the sort of bigger nations, and they're not a conventional bigger nation, but they did have quite a good few years, and people saw them becoming a bit of a, maybe being able to enter into that sort of second power status of the global teams, a bit like Portugal, Switzerland, and that's Poland. They have been in a massive downward turn these last couple of years. I mean, the last World Cup, they did awful. I mean, they were in a group they easily should have probably been winning. And then, what was it, Colombia and Japan in the end, eclipsing them.
They were also, like, unwatchable.
It was hard group, because I think all them teams were pretty on a similar level for me.
But they've just been in a very clear downward turn, Poland. Mm. And a lot of people are saying that it's the case of they've got a very aging squad. Their talented players are getting older, and it's not. And everyone's got to remember, international football players retire a lot younger than they do for club football. So Lewandowski, he may only be around 13. I'm pretty sure he's somewhere around that. But that probably means he's only got about a year or two left of football for the Polish national team. You've got other players like Glick. Again, it's maybe not looking too good for Poland. They might sort of be going back down to what we knew them as before. But they did have a good few years, at least, I suppose.
Yeah, they have a handful of relatively good young players like Arkadiusz Milik and Jan Bednarek. Yeah, they were also just like really not good to watch in the World Cup. Like that, in that group, Japan were like the best team to watch. They were so fun. I loved Japan in that World Cup.
I did as well. They were quite good fun. Right, other teams to talk about in the Nations League, of our home nations. Let's start with the optimistic stuff first. Scotland, they got promoted out of League C. I think most people realised they were probably quite likely to get promoted out of League C. It was kind of more a circumstance of the rankings at the time that they got put so low down. But reasons to be cheerful, I suppose. It's quite good to see Scotland actually improving as a country rather than getting worse. Because I don't know about anyone else, I like to see the home nations do well apart from when they play us. And I want them to be as competitive as possible when they play us. I want England-Scotland games to be good games rather than just the drubbings they end up being.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was when England got knocked out, I was all over Wales in the Euros. Like that's my view on it. It's nice to have somebody else to support. I don't really like this whole thing that when England were getting quite far in the World Cup, that there was this idea that Welsh fans and Scottish fans hated us for it. Like, I actually don't, like, maybe they did, but I wouldn't. I quite like to see the United Kingdom do well in tournaments. I know that sounds, you know, a bit patriotic or in a way, I guess.
Oh, but you dirty unionist.
Yeah, no, but I quite like it. It's the same way that I'll support Man United in the Champions League or City in the Champions League, because I just quite like seeing teams that I have a slightly more personal connection to do well in tournaments. I don't really get the whole Scotland v England thing, and unless you say when we're playing them, then I want us to rip them to shreds. But
Wales also, they didn't do badly. They stuck in their position in League B. I think they saw it as a bit of an opportunity to get promoted out of that into the top group. But it's not a disaster, all things considered, especially, I mean, admittedly, they did do it in pretty poor fashion. Losing to Albania on their final match? That's just bad. But Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, I know Republic of Ireland isn't a home nation. Apologies, Irish fans, for including you in this. We accept you're not a part of the UK anymore. Okay, don't worry. But Northern Ireland, probably more victims of overperformance in recent years. That was a tough old bloody group they had. I think they had Bosnia and Herzegovina and Austria. So that's two pretty good teams. They didn't get a single point. I wouldn't say there's anything harsh on Northern Ireland. That's just them having overperformed so much in recent years. Republic of Ireland, though, they did very badly. And Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane have now since left. So that's pretty good changes. Yeah, no, they've gone. I don't know if that's a sacking or if that's a kind of mutual dismissal type of thing. But with them in a bit of disarray, I don't think they actually won a game in 2018. So I think it was really, really quite bad.
They have looked poor when I've watched them. You could see it was coming.
And the thing is, I don't actually think they've got bad players. I think they've actually got some quite good players. They've got a solid midfield on paper. Okay, yeah, they don't really have any outright strikers and defenders are a bit on the ageing side. But you can do something with that team, especially as Northern Ireland have proved over the last couple of years. You don't necessarily have to be good players if you're a good team. But who do we reckon they could maybe get in as manager to sort of improve that situation?
Chris Hughton's rumoured, but that's not going to happen. So
you'll not want him to go, will you?
No, he won't. He wouldn't go. I don't really see a situation where he'd go. I can't see that happening personally, just with the way we're doing at the moment and how good his situation is at our club. I can't see him doing that.
Kenny is favourite, I think.
Yeah, you got Mick McCarthy and Stephen Kenny. Stephen Kenny's the Dundalk manager in the Irish Premier League. Him and Mick McCarthy are favourites. That's not the most shining endorsement of Irish managers. I mean, I hate to say it, I'm very much a person of the belief that you should always try and get someone from your own country to manage your country. But maybe they should go abroad. I mean, when Mick McCarthy is your best option, unless you're like a League Two team, I think you can do better. And I like Mick McCarthy, I really do.
Yeah, I like
him. He's always
Mick
gotten
McCarthy.
A very harsh deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you could maybe do better, Ireland. Look abroad. Cameroon, they got like 90 applications and all from very established managers. So, Ireland, I reckon you can do better.
Shane, Shane Duffy, player manager.
Yeah, that'll be terrible. any of our more recent listeners will have known a few weeks ago we had quite a good discussion about the European Super League, the alleged discussions going on about whether or not they should be making a league for the elite clubs in Europe to play each other ad infinitum so they can all make some money and fans can hang themselves in their basements. That was the general gist of it. And UEFA, I'll tell you what, I'll give credit to UEFA, and I do rather like this new fella, Alexander Shefflin. He's turned around and just said, it's a fantasy, it's not going to happen, not on my watch, never. Good and you man. Know what? Fair enough. I'm very, very glad that someone actually in a position of power has turned around and said, no, this cannot happen, this is a joke.
To be fair, at least he has the guts to say it about literally the least contentious issue among fans ever. Like, everyone hates it. I literally have never spoken to anyone who thinks this is a good idea or worth doing. And so it's quite an easy thing to come out and denounce, but good on him for doing it anyway.
Yeah, I think it was a waste of time. It would make the Champions League redundant.
Mm. I also don't even think it would be very entertaining. It would just be loads of good. Yeah, exactly, and loads of really tight games. Like every now and again, you get a scorcher like City v Liverpool, like we have this season. But we already have those games.
The Champions League provides those games when you get the likes of your last 16 your quarters. You get those games anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, and they don't get it.
They've been wondering, why is Champions League viewership gone down? Why has it gone down? I don't know. Maybe get it off BT Sports, which nobody has. Mm. That's an idea for you. Maybe put some of the stuff
I have BT Sports.
I have BT Sports, but it's a pissing nightmare to watch BT Sports.
I kind of agree with you. It's annoying.
Unless you have a Skybox and you've got BT Sports on it, or you have the BT Sports player, which no one on earth has. I'm sorry, BT, you're a joke for that one. It's just a nightmare to actually try and watch it. You have to do it on a laptop, or you have to try and connect something up. It's a mess. Half the time when there are Champions League games on, unless I really want to watch it, I just won't bother because it's such a palaver. Mm. Or I'll genuinely go out and find a stream. Despite the fact I can do it legally, because it's easier for me to do it. I know it's obviously a global thing we're looking, trying to get viewerships up, but put some stuff on terrestrial TV if you want to get interest back. Take a little bit of a hit short term so you can get the long term gain.
And people talk a lot about, within domestic leagues, the sort of difference between the top and the bottom. The difference between the top and the bottom in the Champions League is almost bigger than any other domestic league. It's enormous. The difference between Barcelona and Celtic is obscene. It's one of the reasons why it's not entertaining to watch, is because I don't really want to watch who are that team, Ostersunds or whatever it is, in the Europa League with Arsenal. I don't want to watch them play Arsenal. You know, yeah. It's just like, you know.
The argument simple is you've got to look back at what they were doing before when you got the likes of the Cup Winners' Cup, actually get teams that are of a similar calibre in the same tournament together. I wouldn't mind if the Premier League had less Champions League places if it meant we were getting a better Champions League.
So you're basically cutting the Champions League groups down to maybe 16 teams rather than 32 and getting the best of the best.
Yeah, and then you do a separate Cup Winners' Cup, which can go in between, say, the Europa League. And I'd say what as well, I'm actually a fan of the Europa League. I like the Europa League. I actually really like the football that gets played in the Europa League. It tends to be quite entertaining football because the clubs can sort of go for it a bit more. It's where you get exciting younger players coming through because they can take the risks very well.
Yeah.
So you have a Europa League for a few more of those teams, especially because if you're narrowing it down, you're saying you've got an FA Cup winner of respective nations, they're going into a Cup Winners' Cup. So the teams will all be wanting to compete for it properly. And let's say you've got third, fourth, and maybe fifth or something getting into a Europa League spot. You're still going to have big teams, so the quality in Europe, it goes up. It's such an obvious solution how you reform this if you're trying to get it be the best of the best. But I'll tell you what, I do actually really like what Shefflin's come out and said here, because I did read a quite interesting thing the other day, which is about the Super League and what people. It was a sort of commentary about the American people who are doing the friendly cup, Champions Cup thing. The friendly crap thing that Arsenal would enter into every year and all of those kinds of teams. And they're basically saying that what these teams are trying to do is create a sense of inevitability around this whole thing. It's going to happen eventually, the European Super League. It's going to happen. So you've got to eventually get on board with it. Just keep reporting on it. And eventually people will come around to the idea. To have someone like this turn around and just go, nope, not going to happen. Fiction. I quite like that. I do like that. I think that is actually a lot braver than people are maybe giving them credit for. So yeah, fair enough. I've actually got a bit of backing for the people in power in football for once. I am no longer just a rogue.
The world's flipped upside down.
It's all gone backwards. I can't wait for more money in football. It's going to be great. Right. Well, Claudio Ranieri has taken over at Fulham. Obviously, this happened last week, but we didn't put our show last week. Sorry, listeners. But yeah, Ranieri at Fulham. Probably quite a harsh sacking of manager whose name I can never pronounce properly. Slavisa Jukanovic. Him. I don't want to go all Merson on us. Quite a harsh sacking considering he just got them promoted and was given less than 10 games to go and turn it around. And they signed a whole bunch of players, and you know the manager was not involved in that at all because managers aren't really involved in transfers these days. No manager goes out and says, right, let's replace all of the team that just actually played for me with some random high-paid players.
Was he a manager or a head coach? Head coach would probably be, I think he was head coach. That's the way he wouldn't be involved with the transfers, would he?
Yeah, so I think he got dealt a very, very harsh deal. But does anyone else think this is a fair enough one? They had to kind of do it. They were bottom.
They were rubbish. That's the thing. I mean, it's maybe the only things that could be considered harsh about it for me are the fact that Alfie Mawson wasn't fit and ready and playing. I think he would have, because their defence was the only problem. Their attack has been fine. The players they've got are fine. The football they play is good. But their defence is so abysmal. I think it was probably a matter of he wouldn't have got sacked if somebody of the quality of Ranieri wasn't available. I think it's that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, their defence was actually worse than ours. So that probably tells you how bad they are.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But it's kind of an irony because Claudio Ranieri very harshly got sacked from Leicester, despite having won them the Premier League the year before in what is possibly the biggest upset in footballing history. And now he's come in to replace a manager who I think you could quite easily argue is getting a harsh deal himself. It's kind of football just comes around in ways like that. And you'd almost like to think these managers would almost say, no, I'm not going to take that job. I'll wait until this sort of goes into its natural conclusion. I want to give him more time because I would want to be given that in the same situation. Or is that just me being completely idealistic?
It's probably got now is football is a business. It's no longer a sport. So results is going to get you somewhere. And if you don't get the results, you're going to lose your job no matter what, no matter what you've done for the club.
Yeah. And they are also, they are just grossly underperforming with their squad. I think there's no other way to put it. They should be nowhere near where they are with the team that they have.
There's no anymore. Loyalty in the football is gone.
Or at least loyalty as an obligation. Loyalty exists within like what the individual chooses to do. Like you still get players like Gerrard who chooses to stay at Liverpool or whatever. But you know, loyalty as an obligation is like you say, it's non-existent in football.
Well, I'm going to give the Man United fans a bit of a hat tip here. Just remember, Gerrard was not a one club player. He went out to America. Doesn't get that label, does he?
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
And Iniesta's in Japan.
Well, you know.
Yeah. But
do we think Ranieri can turn around Fulham? Because here's my thinking: you've got a man who's famous for being a tinker man, making quite a lot of changes, changing his team around. Didn't do that too much at Leicester when it was going well, of course, because he managed to keep that team fit for an entire season. But when you've got a team where you don't know what your best team is, it's been all change over the summer. You've got a lot of different players. Is that actually what you want, or do you want someone who's going to say, here's my 11, I'm sticking with that? Do you want someone who's going to change around a team that's had this much change?
I don't think that's necessarily the reason why. Because I think he'll do well. But I don't think that's necessarily a problem too much. I think it's more his style of football that will benefit really well in the Fulham team. Because I think in terms of the counter-attacking football, he's got lots of players that fit into that mould. Like
they're already playing that type of football.
No, they're not. They weren't, and they really weren't in the Championship. The only reason they were successful in the Championship in terms of winning games was because the way they defended was keeping hold of the ball. His Leicester team and a lot of the teams he's had in the past don't really care about keeping the ball. They just learn to defend with a good coach defense and then counterattack with rapid pace. Like and they've got the players to do that. Like Seri's a good enough passer and a good enough creator to do it, and he can run through midfield. Mitrovic is just your straight up goal poacher, which is exactly what they need. Schürrle, I actually think I think Schürrle's been one of the biggest problems in Fulham's team. I know that would sound dodgy considering he's having the most shots and scoring a decent amount of goals, but it's so detrimental to have a player shooting from everywhere in your team. It just spoils your chances. But he might, with a bit of good coaching, improve over the next few games and all that kind of thing. I think they'll probably end up being pretty good. I think they'll I would say around 15th for them this year, maybe 14th. But it's going to be 3 points in it between the bottom.
I think you just need to work the defence.
Yeah.
Do you think they've got they've already scored the goals, because Mitrovic has already scored a few this season. He just needs to get the defence sorted, and once that's sorted, I think you'll see that they'll do well from then.
Mm.
Would they have not been better off then trying to go for someone more like Tony Pulis? He'd get them defending. Tony Pulis, Sam Allardyce. I'm pretty sure they're both around.
When he's with Middlesbrough, you're saying them this season, they're not exactly conceding many, but they're not scoring many either. Even the strikers they've got.
Yeah, exactly. And that squad is nowhere near built for a Pulis side. It is built for a side that want to play the ball and do more than lump long balls up and put 11 men behind the ball, hoping to get crosses in. They want to be playing balls into high defences. They want people to pass. They've got the players built to play that system. I actually think Ranieri's probably going to end up doing really well there. I think it makes sense for him.
I think this team was almost perfectly set up for bringing in someone like Sam Allardyce. They've got the forwards for it. They've got...
Really? They've got the forwards for a Sam Allardyce? Well, to be fair, yeah. Sam Allardyce has changed. Like, Sam Allardyce at Everton and West Ham was different. Yeah.
Look, I think there's such a direct comparison to when he went to Crystal Palace. I think there is such a direct comparison with the way the teams should have been set up and the way they had been set up and the players they had. I think there is such a direct comparison there.
That Palace team was set up from a Tony Pulis squad.
Yeah, but it had a team where you had good big strikers and fast wingers.
Mitrovic is the quality of Mitrovic isn't that necessarily that he's big. It's that he's a nuisance and he's a pain.
He's a physical player, so it would work for him.
And I think
it could work for like an Allardyce / Pulis manager, because I look at Pulis, he's not a manager. He has a team that is going to go for promotion. I think he is more of a team that are going to fight at the bottom. You need that manager that's going to put fight into a team.
To be fair, Allardyce changed over his last few clubs. He was different at Everton and West Ham than he was before. Like he was a little bit less sort of dogged and pragmatic. It was a little bit more fluid. But maybe the close comparisons, like with Mitrovic at Newcastle, one of the reasons Mitrovic didn't work is because he wasn't willing to do a lot of that holding up the ball or not as good at that as, like you say, a big striker would be. That's why they got in somebody like Rondon. And I'd rather have Mitrovic than Rondon, but I like both of them. They offer different things. But I think Mitrovic isn't as built for that system.
I think you're dismissing Sam Allardyce striking football as being too much Andy Carroll. I mean, I love Andy.
No.
He did it with very different kinds of strikers. And what the key of what I'm trying to say is, everyone knows that Fulham team can attack. Anyone who's come up against them this season sees how that Fulham team can attack. Yeah. And they're still going down. You're not going to win. You're not going to win getting relegated by attacking well. It doesn't happen that way. You've got to defend well. You've got to learn how to do shutouts. You've got to learn where to get draws when you need a draw and where to steal a win. Who's better than Sam Allardyce? Ranieri, if he can get it going, sure, that team can do all right, but maybe not this season. Maybe this season is a little bit too soon. Maybe if they'd brought in someone like Allardyce and said, stabilise us for a year, you'll be given a nice big one-year contract to go and do this. Bring in Ranieri next season when you've got a bit of time. Not when you're shipping goals left, right and centre. Everyone knows you can play counter-attacking football, but then bring in someone like Allardyce and say, stabilise us for a year. That's what we really need. He'll take that job. He'll take that job happily all day, every day. He'll know that he could do it as well. The thing I'm thinking is, Ranieri, as much as I like the man, there's a question mark over whether or not he's the man for this type of job. Allardyce, I think he sorts you out no matter what.
Do you think so? I've winning the Premier and not getting relegated
are massively different.
He did it with us. Because if we still had him and he never went for the England job, I think we wouldn't be where we are now.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I agree with Sam Allardyce is a good choice, but I just don't think he's a better choice than Ranieri. I think Ranieri's a better choice. I'm really surprised by that, to be fair.
Ranieri's a better manager. I would agree with that, but for the job Fulham need doing this year, I can't see why they didn't go for someone like Allardyce. Maybe they did. Maybe he turned them down. Maybe it's someone like that. Maybe there's stuff we don't know about there. But I think Ranieri is a manager you get in when you've got things relatively stable, when you've got things relatively steady and you're looking to build. You don't build on this season. You just stay up. That's what you do in this season. You don't try and build and say, let's improve on this. You're going down. you improve on that a little bit and you're probably still going down. You can get that team playing the best kind of football and it will still probably take you down. You need to get that team to stop conceding goals. That's Sam Allardyce's territory right there.
So do you think they're going to still be conceding the amount of goals they do under Ranieri?
As much as I love Ranieri, I don't think it's set up for the right kind of thing, this one.
Do you think they're going to go down then?
Yeah, I do. I don't think they're good enough.
I think they've got
QPR in all over them.
They're going to spend fat in January, though. They're going to spend, or at least they'll probably get a few more loans in or something, because their loan signings have actually been really good.
That's what's got them into this position in the first place.
How?
Spending too much money as sometimes being a problem for a club that's just come up. You've never heard of that one before.
You seriously think that? You think their signings have been the problem that...
It's because the team needs time to gel.
Their signings have been good signings. We all agreed they were good players. It's how you bring in that many players all at once, and then you go and ship out the players who got you there. And you don't sell them. You don't sell those players, do you? You don't sell Bettinelli, who was arguably the best goalkeeper in the Championship last year. No, he's sitting on the bench. You're now playing players who have no connection. Who have not, as Andy says, they've not gelled properly. They've not got any real style of play that they're going for. They're just sort of attacking at will. That doesn't work. And if you hadn't spent that money, you've got a much more stable team. A team which is built for someone like Ranieri to come in and take.
So you think Cardiff are in a better position because they've kept their team and just signed a few experienced Premier League players?
It's not one or the other. It's not going, you know, sign basically no one and sign absolutely everyone. There's a nice little middle ground which you can sit into where you sign some players who improve a team but basically keep the structure of your team there so that not everyone hates playing for that club.
See, I'm surprised by that. I don't think that was at all. I thought they had a great window. When
QPR came up and they started spending all that money, signed some amazing players and rattled themselves back down.
Yeah, but that's because they were rubbish. That's because of their coaching and their team.
Fulham are desperately crap.
Yeah, which is why they've sacked their manager and brought in somebody who has the ability to actually gel together a functional football team, not just one that relentlessly attacks with no, like you say, with very little hope other than just outscoring the opposition.
Listeners, you will hear me now. I'm going to make a £5 bet with Harry.
Yeah. Are we going to do if Fulham to go down?
£5.
All right. Yeah, I'll gladly do that.
£5.
Fulham will stay up. Right. I'd shake your hand if I could.
I'll seal the deal.
That was the sound of a handshake right there.
Yeah, there we go. £5. Fulham will stay up. Fulham will stay up.
All right, listeners.
I'm going to go one step further. Fulham will finish 15th.
All right, that's all right. I'm going to look forward to it, even if they finish like 17th now. That's £5 mine, boy.
They're going to have a dodgy few weeks over between now and, let's say, sort of the end, like sort of end of the year, and then they're going to go on an absolute mad one. I'm going to win like 6 out of 10 or something like that.
All right, listeners, let us know what you think. Let us know if you think that Sam Allardyce would have done better. Let us know if you think Fulham are going to be going down or whatever.
Sounds like a Twitter poll.
We're going to set up a Twitter poll for you. I'll include an option for Sam Allardyce would have saved them. We can say that on behalf of the V2 Sam Allardyce fan club.
This has all come across like I don't like Sam Allardyce. I like Sam Allardyce. I just think that Ranieri is a really, really good fit for them. I think he's a really good fit for their squad.
I was walking to work the other day and just in my head popped that interview with Jose Mourinho when he was asked who he'd like to least fight.
Big Sam? He would kill me.
He would kill me. Yeah. And it just randomly came into my head. Reminded me how much I miss Big Sam.
The best bit about that interview is because that's like early Mourinho is the guy asks him to it, and obviously like his assistants, they're like, don't answer that question. And Mourinho goes, can I answer the question?
Mourinho, right.
Yeah, that is prime Mourinho.
Other news, VAR is coming into the Premier League, and I can't help but feel that this is a massive backstep by the Premier League. Just going, they initially went, oh, we need more time to assess it, and then some very bad decisions kept happening, and they've gone, yeah, it did actually work at the World Cup, all right, didn't it? Maybe we should do the thing that's really obvious that everyone's been telling us to do for a while now. I think they were even saying that they might, like, Champions League, they might bring it into the competition sooner. I think that what's happened is you've had it at the World Cup where people have gone, all right, yeah, VAR can be a bit of a pain in the arse. made the right decisions more than it made the wrong decisions. It improved the decisions that were being made. And then they were like, oh, we'll give it another year and see what happens. And then, of course, terrible decisions get made because that's what happens. And then they've gone, right, yeah, no, this actually might relegate clubs or cost clubs titles. I mean, thank God for Charlie Austin, because I feel like he actually might have been the catalyst for all this. Oh,
have you seen the Park Life video?
I've seen the Park Life video.
That's amazing. Everybody, anybody who hasn't seen it, watch the Charlie Austin Park Life video. It's amazing.
So, that's a video we recommend, Patrice, ever don't watch, though.
Yeah, yeah, don't watch that one.
It reminded me of last season when, I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, Southampton v. Watford, Abdoulaye Doucouré handballs the ball into the goal, and it's not even, like, in doubt that he's done it. It's so obvious, and the only person who's not seen is the referee. And we only stayed up by, like, 2 points in the end. That could have been the difference very easily. The kind of result we had is, again, one of those ones that could be the difference between us staying up and us going down. This decision needed to be made. I know some people aren't a big fan of VAR, but the sooner we start doing it, the sooner we get it to the point where it isn't a problem, where it's not a pain in the ass. That's how it works. You do it, and then you get better at it.
It's got to be, for me, it's got to be a challenge system. I don't think it should be every single time something happens, the referee gets balls. I think the managers, if they think something happened or a player tells them, they should challenge it. They should get so many challenges.
Yeah, and it should be only like captains who can do it, a bit like in the cricket.
Yeah, yeah, I don't actually like that. I prefer, because that would remove, you'd have to have some sort of rule. Because one of the things I like about VAR that most people don't talk about it is actually the impact it has on the game and the players themselves. Because it means the players don't go in for ridiculously horrible tackles that they know they might not, that they, you know, they're not going to get away with it if VAR's there. They don't elbow people in the back during corners and push people over, because it removes all of those really cynical aspects from the game, because they know they're going to get caught by it. And a challenge system would...
No, that's why you do a cricket-style system where essentially either the captains can say, right, I think a foul's happened there, I want to challenge this, or the referee can say, I'm really not sure what just happened there, I need to go and review this. Screw you, captains, I don't care what you say, I'm making a decision to go and review this because I'm not sure. Just like the umpires can do, they can go, right, yeah, I wasn't really sure about that. We're gonna need to go to the screen there. So you have it up to the discretion of the teams and the referee. Again, it's almost like a hybrid rugby system, where they, a bit like England v New Zealand the other day, we score a try, but the ref's not sure. No one said to him, we don't think that's a try. He's just gone, I need to double check that. I'm maybe not sure about that one.
Yeah. See, I'm not really in favour of that. I quite like the way they do it in the World Cup, where they've just got somebody watching the whole game who just buzzes into him and goes, oh, ref, you got that one wrong. Everyone knew the moment he walked over to that screen that the decision was wrong and it was going to get overturned.
I think it's a good system, but I think the only downside about that system is it means it will never be implemented in the lower leagues, because you'll just need too many officials. They can't afford it.
It's true.
It genuinely can't be afforded. If you've only got one who needs to be called on specific moments, you could essentially have a room full of, like, say, five officials who can be doing all of the Championship games or League One games at the same time, so they're only having to do that for one moment. That's where you can cut the cost down for the lower leagues. Rather than having set of VAR officials for every single game, because if they've got to watch the whole game and tell the referee where something's gone wrong, you've got to have ones at every single game. Or you can have a room of, say, five of them who are doing all the 3 o'clock kickoffs for a Championship, you've got another five doing all the kickoffs for League One, for the referee to say to them, I need a decision here.
So you want, like, the big brother, somebody watching all the games,
just get
transmitting it to the ground.
When somebody called Gillette Soccer watching all the games, just get them to tell you whether it's a penalty or not.
But yeah, that way you could actually effectively roll that down, probably down to almost a conference level. And that's probably been the biggest issue with VAR, arguably, is that we know it's only something that the top level can have. Implement it in a way you've got kind of a challenge system going on, because you can't have two levels of VAR. Here's what we have for your top level of football, here's what we have for the rest. It's got to be the same system all round, especially so players can get used to it if they're going to get promoted and so forth. You've got to have something that can actually work for everyone. I think a system like that is the one where it could genuinely work for everyone.
Do you not worry you'll end up with incidents where, like, players are, like, using challenges to stall the game and things like this? And
well, no, because you do it like cricket, you get two challenges. If you mess up a challenge, you've lost the challenge.
But do you not? I don't think I necessarily agree with that, because there's ones where it's like 50-50s and it could go either way, and like, yeah, exactly. Which is why it's difficult to challenge. Whereas within cricket and rugby, it's normally hard facts. It's normally like cricket. Did it hit
not
the stumps?
Always.
Were they, well, yeah, not but always. But the majority of them are. In cricket and rugby, it's normally, did they hit the stumps? Was his foot out of play when he landed the try? Is that an expression? You know, grounded is probably
the
word.
You grounded. For that, I think.
You grounded a try, yeah.
Your referee's decision at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But that diminishes the point of having a challenge, is because if you know in your eyes, because it's basically about referees that miss things. That's what the ultimate thing about VAR is referees who miss things rather than making mistakes. Right. Because like making a mistake is seeing something wrong and misinterpreting what you see. Whereas like VAR is, I think the best thing about it is all the stuff that the officials don't see, like an offside that the linesman misses and things like this.
They could still be reviewed, like, for instance, when they have goals, they could still do it like the rugby try system. You just review every single goal just in case something happened and build up and all of that lot. So it's not saying that only things that are challenged are going to be reviewed. It's say there are key decisions which will always be reviewed. And you can also leave it up to the refs if they're just not sure what's happened. If a ref talks to the assistant and says, did you see that? No, I'm not really sure there. Did you see that? No, I'm not really sure. Right, I need to go and do a challenge here. I need to be the one who does it. I think it open up, and that does, for me, the big thing is it opens up for the other leagues. I tell you what.
Yeah, I do agree with you. There does need to be a way for it to be integrated into lower league football. I do agree with you there, 100%. But I'm not sure I would introduce the challenge.
I want to see, no matter what we do, is the players need to be properly educated about how VAR works.
Mm.
The biggest thing I hated about it at the World Cup is all the players doing that silly sign, despite the fact that they never needed to do it once. Literally, you could have never done that sign, and if a mistake's been made, they're going to see it. That's how it works. You can't, like, okay, that's the thing with a challenge system is they have to make that, I need to go and see this one on the TV thing.
Yeah. But,
God, that annoyed me so bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that would just come with time. I think, to be honest, even a few weeks into the season, players will realise that, like, and another thing is, I think it will actually give referees more power to book players or punish players for, like, pestering the referee. It's because the ref can just say, look, it's going to get looked at if I'm wrong. So just go away. And if it's wrong, they'll tell me and I'll overturn it. And then if they still complain and moan and cry about it, then he can just book them, because there's not like they're having genuine outrage over a wrong decision, because they know it's going to be eventually be remedied if they really, truly in their heart know it's wrong and they're not just trying to cheat the referee out of a decision. So like ultimately, I think that's all the stuff I like about it more than the occasion. Like obviously the occasional wrong decision being put right is brilliant. That's great stuff. But it's actually all the extras. Like I think it helps us usher into a new era of sportsmanship, because it's been rifely bad in the last few years. Like the amount of diving and I think it will help with the the players faking injuries, because you'll be able to look back at Pepe's falling over when he gets pushed in the back.
I was going to say about this is one of the really good things this opens up is when eventually what they're going to have is they're going to have a VAR system where there are certain decisions that don't get called out, like a player getting touched and going flying over like he's been fouled properly. Yeah, but the little decisions that are kind of in the grey area, but we know they shouldn't be happening. Once those start getting not called up by video referees, they've got to start doing something about it, because it becomes so much more obvious, doesn't it? Yeah. When you can't go and say, actually, that isn't a penalty, when the player's thrown himself to the ground despite the fact there's been minimal contact, then you've got to start actually enacting some other policy changes to make that stuff a little bit less obvious. You've got to have maybe retrospective action on more than just diving, but the things which are very close to diving, which are in diving in all but name. So I'm quite optimistic about what it can kind of impact on the broader side of things, as you've said, with regards to things like sportsmanship. But are we all agreed this is actually a good thing that's happening?
Yeah, I like it.
I do.
Excellent.
It's going to be a work in progress, I think. I don't think it's going to work straight away. I think it's going to be a work in progress over time still.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I said, it's a case, for me, it's a case of the sooner we start doing it, the sooner we get to that point where it's no longer a work in progress. It's like rugby. It's just, it's there and it's a good thing.
It's also interesting because I actually know a lot of people who changed their mind. Like my dad in particular was very anti-VAR, and then it was in the World Cup and my argument was, in the World Cup it's probably going to be as bad as it ever will be, and
yeah,
it wasn't
the
that
beta,
bad.
The 1.0 version of anything is always the most buggy, and
exactly, and that was barely even 1.0. I kind of felt like it was rushed out for the World Cup then in general, to be honest. And the only maybe, it might be quite difficult with so many games going on the weekend and they're all going to need to be VAR'd and all this kind of stuff, but yeah, I mean, I like it. I've liked it since it was talked about at the start, really. So I'm glad it's coming in.
Thank you for joining us very much this week on the V2 Football Podcast. We've got a whole bunch of other stuff up on the V2 website. A lot of stuff if you're into F1, if you're into wrestling, plenty of stuff up on there. And we're going to be trying to come up with a Christmas special in the not too distant future, probably around Christmas. Thank you for joining us very much. Please send us your questions as well. If you've got any questions you want us to answer, if you've got any topics you want us to cover, if there's anything you want to see us discuss, debate, please send them to us. Send them to us on Twitter, send them to us on Facebook. Bring them up on the forum, 66V2. Thank you for joining us. It's goodbye from me, goodbye from the rest of the guys, and we will see you all next week.